So, god middag, or rather good afternoon, I would like to say to everybody. My name is Michael von Otter, and I have the privilege of being the moderator leading the discussion this afternoon on this, as we consider it, very important subject on how to increase take-up of IPv6. I'm usually working with the trade organization, the IT and telecom business in Sweden, and I have a previous story within the Confederation of Swedish Enterprise, and I've been for 30 years working in the users community, more or less, of IT and telecom. We realized from our perspective that this is a subject which is growing fast, very fast and increasingly fast, to become a hot and very important topic to solve the needs for business in the future of how to access the internet. We've also been, the organization I'm working with in the IT and Telecom Business Association, we've been running a seminar together with Stiftelsen, whatever that might be in English, the organizer of this event, which actually was an eye-opener to more or less all the participants, but also was considered as very important and very interesting. Actually, one of the speakers there was from Volvo, and he was responsible for the wireless car initiatives within Volvo, which of course implies heavy usage of internet, mobile internet, wireless internet, and of the possibility of accessing cars wherever they are and doing a lot of fancy stuff, which he elaborated a bit on. And he also was honest enough to tell us that when I called him this summer to ask him whether or not he could participate in this seminar, he said, voluntarily, of course, yes, we certainly will, without really knowing what the subject was, because he never heard about the problem before. And he was more or less in charge of this business within Volvo. Now, I don't think that says too much about Volvo, but rather it says a lot about the knowledge and the state of art, so to speak, and mindset within business and perhaps also within the telecom area on how important this is with with IPv6, introducing IPv6. So it's with great pleasure that I accepted the invitation from Staffan Janell last week to chair this this seminar. And we're going to have four speeches to start off with. I've been told something like 50 minutes each, and then we'll have a roundtable session. It would be of interest for me and perhaps for all the other here to just know very short name and where you, what kind of organization you're from. Now, as I said, Michael van Otter from Swedish IT and Telecom Business. I do believe your name is... Ah, yes, we have it there. Detlef Eckhart. And perhaps, do I have to do this by sending this thing around? Okay, I better do that. If you just introduce yourself into this mic.
Yes, and I'm Magnus Riella, the fourth speaker from Greenwich Consulting.
I'm Adam Dunkels from Six, the third speaker this session.
My name is Pernilla Rydmark. I'm from .se.
My name is Adolf Slam, and I'm from the Swedish Regulation Authority for Post and Telecom.
My name is Richard Persson, and I'm from the Norwegian NORED, the top domain.
Patrick Arkley, Verizon Business.
Matthias Andersson, SMHI.
And my name is Björn, I'm from a Swedish company called Compricer.
José López from read.es from Spain.
Pierre Bonis from afnic.fr.
Carsten Stortman from Company Minimize.
Peter Stuge from a Swedish registrar called Birdnet.
Stefan Hagnell from .se.
Adam Palmer from .org.
Anders Rafting, I'm coming from the Swedish regulator.
My name is Michael Wimber, I'm from .se.
And my name is Panagiotis Aragiotis, I come from the NISA, the European Network Information Security Agency.
Thank you. And now we all know each other. I won't take any more time from these 90 minutes. So, Mr. Eckert Detlef, please, the table, the chair, the is yours. The reason just why we want this mic is because everything is taped. So whatever you're going to say inside this is going to be recorded forever.
I was not finishing that sentence. Okay, let's see whether that works. It works. Good. My call is on?
I think so.
Yeah? Good. Perfect. I'm from the European Commission, and we have launched in May the second initiative on IP version 6. The first one was on 2002, and as you can see from the statistics that you all know, that one wasn't really successful. But we don't take the blame. Don't make any mistake. But we tried, and we took our lesson. So why IP version 6 initiative from European Commission? Well, the reasoning is the same as 2002, and the reason is also the same as the people that developed IP version 6, address scarcity. Okay, at that time, we also believed we would do a nicer and better protocol. Looking back, I think we could have done several things differently. Nevertheless, this is what we have and what we have to live today. The problem is we have two options. We don't have three, we don't have four. I think we have two options. Option number one is and it's not really an option whereby we have the choice. It's an option whereby many people will decide in one way or the other, and we will see what will be the result on the marketplace. But the number one will really be IP version 4, we continue. There will be island of IP version 6, some testing, some really strange people like maybe here in the room that love IP version 6, and also in our research networks, Géant, and so we do this. But the real world will not move to IP version 6 anytime soon. But we will manage scarcity. We will introduce more net. We will start to trade IP version 4 addresses and so on and so forth. And the likelihood that this is happening, that this will happening, is pretty high. I would not really say that IP version 6 will come tomorrow as a result. It's not the question, as you hear sometimes, it's not an if, but when and how. The world is more complex than that. So having said this, we can also introduce IP version 6 proactively. And many people that have been working and seen the internet and see the potential of IP version 6 believe we should drive IP version 6 proactively. And as European Commission, we also have made this decision to say, yes, we should do this. It is not an easy argument, and you will find a lot of people be hesitant to follow you. It's not an easygoing argument. But we think we need to do this, and this is why we adopted this action plan. Today, the adoption of IP version 6, in fact, is low. You can take any measure you want. It is between 0.001% to 1%. It depends on what you just measure. The adoption is, this is the beauty, but also the disadvantage of the internet, is a decentralized process. We in the European Commission, we would, of course, love to have a directive saying everyone moves to IP version 6 in 2010, and that's it. But unfortunately, our reach is not to the rest of the world beyond the EU, and this is a kind of market decision that we have to respect. Nevertheless, as a public sector, we play a role in IP version 6 and in the deployment. And because the incentives for individuals depends on all the others, we have a kind of, I wouldn't say catch-22 or chicken-egg problem. In a way, it is. But it's a collective action problem. If everyone were to move to IP version 6 tomorrow, we would probably all be happy. But that's not a reality because we have too many people, and 99% of our enterprise users would say, why should I move now? I listen to Gartner, and Gartner tells me move in 2015, if at all. That is what Gartner tells enterprise customers. So this is the message you actually get up to. So in such a situation, we hope that with policy we can make a difference, and that's the background. So what are we proposing is, first of all, we have made a bold decision to say we would like to get in the EU 25% of potential users. That is a big step forward, and some people say this is unrealistic. I would say it's very ambitious. But we need this 25% objective in order to make people move. We also said then, okay, how are we going to achieve that? And the first one is, when you go today on IP version 6, you will not see much on the internet. The IP version 6 universe is basically empty. So you're looking to the dark matter of the universe. So like the physicists, they are convinced that there will be much more content, much more material or matter in as dark matter than visible matter. In IP version 6, we will one day have more content than on IP version 4. The question is only, when will this happen? How to drive this? It's not easy because today you can only make the following argument. Please be ready before IP version 6 hits you. And the second one is maybe we can offer some public recognition. So the question here for us is outreach. But we don't have, as policymaker, much of a convincing argument. And we are struggling ourselves to bring our own content on IP version 6. We are going to do that, but internally we have to work hard to make this happen. The second thing is to teach, not really to teach, but to make and to ensure that people are aware that timely preparation for IP version 6 is needed. And here, even when some of the consultant companies actually recommend the same by saying if you start to prepare early for IP version 6, it costs you less. Because when you do this as a 1 year or half a year project, then it's a nightmare. But once you do this over time, you test a little bit here, you do this, you create a tunnel, and any time you touch a customer database and you look at what would it need to establish IP version 6, it's much easier to do it. So in the upgrade cycle, over 2 or 3 or 4 years, it doesn't hurt. But if you have to do this in 2012 or 13, within 6 or 12 months, it hurts. So be ready now. So that's one of the big arguments we have. Then something we are currently working on, and where probably we as governments in the European Union have the biggest impact, is public procurement. That our own network, our own e-government services, our own websites are on IP version 6. And this is where we are currently working on, and I come back to this in a second. Then last but not least, we would like to monitor the security and privacy implications. Without having a clear roadmap what to do in this field, we had this morning here in this workshop an interesting debate about firewall, IP version 6 readiness, and so on and so forth. So this is the kind of things, and during this session I was thinking of maybe we could launch a kind of project in that area to extend what people here in Sweden and in ICANN have already done. And in that sense, on security and privacy, I would like to elaborate a little bit more, just to have a slight or a very brief dive into what kind of issues we are having. Now, let's look at the first thing. IP version 6 offers certainly an advantage over IP version 4 in providing so many addresses. Net port scanning and host identification is much more difficult, which has some nice side effects, namely that classes of self-propagating worms will have difficulties to find their way through. But we all agree, hopefully, that this is security by obscurity. So it's not really, really a big, big advantage. It's an advantage, but we shouldn't say that is a big, big advantage. It's something that we can have. IP version 6 security issues are partly different from IPv4. And that is a big problem for network owners or CIOs, because they have to justify training, new experience, and threat mitigation, and they have to trade this against what, or in favor of gaining what. And this kind of advantage they may have in as opposed to the cost and the worries they have, that may threaten them off for the time being. So we have to increase this knowledge, because there's not enough knowledge around this one. And the things are, as you can see in, for instance, the neighbor discovery and auto configuration, are different in IPv6 than in IPv4. Today, we touched briefly about this as regard to ICMP, which needs to be enabled on V6 networks. Another point, that was our morning session about the state of affairs in firewalls. In general, security products, like for instance IDS, they are lagging full support in IPv6. You can have it, you can start with it, but it is not, you cannot take it for granted. So as a network owner, you have to look at it closer, and we have to work with those vendors to make some more progress. There were a number of protocol weaknesses exposed. A year ago, two French researchers have analyzed the type 0 router header, and they have come up with a number of attack vectors. As far as I know, in IETF, there's no work on going to deprecate the type 0 router header from this standard implementation. You still need type 2 for mobile IP, but you don't need type 0. Actually, those two researchers were of the opinion this is a useless feature, only useful for attackers. Then, although you may not have deployed IPv6 today in your network, but through tunneling, you may actually have IPv6 traffic on your network. That means even network owners that believe they have nothing to do with it, they actually have, because they may have created islands of IPv6 through the tunneling process. So everyone, even not running IPv6, needs to be aware of the implementations that you have. This is a session where we also should talk about business opportunities. And I would like to use the security consideration into coming into this opportunity. The opportunity actually in security comes from the address space. As many as I would say, even everything related advantages for coming from IPv6 is indirectly coming from the address space. And often you hear IPv6 is more secure because it is IPsec is enabled. We all know that this is no longer a real argument. But when you combine IPv6 and IPv6 IPsec plus the address space, you come up with an interesting new architecture for security. And the IPsec in IPv6 through the address space connects endpoints. And that is something which probably can give us in the future a different security model, and also not only a security model, but also a new architecture how to design your networks. And I really would like to see more architectural comparison, V4 to V6, to convince CIOs that this new architecture makes more sense, because it gives users a better experience and allows users to do more things easier. For instance, you could use your connection to your corporate network without even knowing whether you are on which network you are, because you do an end-to-end security. Of course, you need, in a way, it ends with an architecture where you stop the perimeter defense. You bring the perimeter decentralized in a decentralized way to the hosts. So you need to manage the host. You need to put protection on the hosts. And that means you run your own internet as a public network. You can even have it open as a public network. Some people may say already today, the fiction that your internet behind the perimeter is something safe is just a fiction. You should be aware that you should treat your own network as hostile as the internet. And this would actually give you the opportunity to do this. And this decentralized security or host-centric security model and also architecture would provide a number of new features. This could be a business model for the future, also to drive IPv6. It still needs some work, I believe, because the question is granular security, yes, but at the other hand, you have more complexity in your network because out of a sudden you not only need to manage the one gateway firewall, out of a sudden you manage distributed firewalls on your hosts. What is the feeling for network operators? Probably today, many of them will probably say, "Ooh, that's a hard call, and I don't want to go that way." But over time, maybe this becomes more attractive. And so the user experience and having a more agile business could hopefully be a good business case for this. So our last activities in that field. So our current priority in the EU is discussion with member states. So this is what is currently happening. We will have a telecom council it's called Telecom Council, where member states meet in November. End November, whereby we hopefully get to some agreements, some policy agreements, how to move ahead. So this is currently my number one priority, our number one priority to get this right. We are in the process of launching a major study, to measure the IPv6 deployment. There are already some publications on the internet, but we will intensify this with a study that will give us a new methodology, and we will follow this up until 2010. This is currently happening. Then we have two projects in our research program. One is called 6Deploy, which is a follow-up of 6Dis. It's a deployment initiative also going beyond the EU into some African countries and some Asian countries. And another one is IPv6 in autonomic networks. And then we have a number of outreach activities. If you like, today I'm doing this. This is the kind of activities that we are doing. And we are working together with some international partners, in particular with our US colleagues, because US has, through OMB, issued 2005 a mandate to move to IPv6, but actually it was only a mandate to be IPv6 ready, but not really to deploy IPv6 in applications. The next step with the new administration, we are going to work together and to see how we can join forces. In a way, this gives you, in a nutshell, currently the reasoning why we are doing this, what we are doing, how we see certain things, where the potential might be, and what we are currently up to. Thanks for your attention. Thank you.
Thank you. Staffan Agnell, may I ask you to approach the bench and
take the microphone?
Yes. Thank you. Are there any immediate or specific questions to Detlef that you would like to raise right now? We'll be back in the discussion. It was interesting to hear about the initiatives from the Commission. One important thing is, I believe, to understand how to reach the business community. I'm not talking about the IT business, but rather the user community. And to a certain extent, I know that yes, Staffan Agnell has been looking into that. I'm not quite sure what you're going to talk about right now, but you might cover that also. Please, Staffan.
Okay, thank you. From the previous presentation, maybe we're a bit naive when you mentioned that the Gartner Group says that you should go into this 2015, and we thought that it should come faster, but we may be a little bit naive. So our ambition has really been higher to get this deployed faster, but we'll see. Okay, some background. Why are we into this, and why should .se work with IPv6? I mean, we are a registry, right? Yes, but we also have a bylaw saying, stating that we shall develop internet. And the funding for that development is presently coming from the registry business, the .se business. We also say that we should not just develop internet, but the good of this should actually be brought back to the domain name business. And our belief is that by developing internet, we will have a growth on domain name business. It's proven by some different reports. So the bylaw states that we should develop internet, and how can you develop internet? Well, IPv6 is, of course, one way to do it, but there are also other possibilities to develop internet. So I shall not go into all of this now, but roughly we are doing different things for developing internet. We have publications like we are calling them internet guides. We have on technical matters, but also on lifestyle when it comes to internet. The one that are most popular is about young people's lifestyle on the internet, because parents like to read about it and find out what they are doing, actually. We have this technical deployment stuff we are working with. It's DNSSEC and IPv6, but we also have some more specific user-oriented activities, like internet in school. We have a nice project called the WebStar, and it's actually to use web in the educational system much more than it's used today. Instead of writing reports on paper, you should use web technology. So we have a number of different activities where IPv6 is one of the activities, and that's the topic for today. So when I said we are maybe a little bit naive, because this was our belief, we thought that, well, it should be possible to actually get something up and running faster.
What I was quoting was the Gartner.
Yeah. No. The Gartner, I meant the Gartner, sure. But if this is possible or not, that's another question. So what have we done? What have we found out so far? Well, when we started this project, we started it just half a year ago, actually. We said that one good thing to do is actually to do your own, eat your own dog food. So if everybody starts to upgrade their own stuff, we're almost done, right? It's as simple as that. So instead of going out and telling everybody else what to do, let's start actually upgrading our own network. And have you succeeded with that? No. Because there are some problems. There are upgrades that has to be done and resources to be allocated to this work. We have done some part of it, but we're not really finished. But, as I said, I think it's very important that everybody actually starts to do their own stuff before we look into everything else that has to be done. We also have done a lot of sort of research. What is the situation? What is the attitude towards IPv6? And I shall get back to that one. We have had some seminars, as Mikael said. We think it's very important to actually have some sort of discussion, have some knowledge about this. So just to network, and I don't mean IPv6 network, I mean human network, networking around this, I think it's very important. So build up the knowledge as an activity. There was the test report from the IPv6 firewall test presented earlier this day. That's one test that we are supporting and have initiated. And I think there's other stuff you could also look into it to build up the knowledge around IPv6. So if we look at our own applications, we have one very popular application called this throughput test application. And it's nothing strange with this is a very simple application. You got one big bottom you're pushing, and the results will show up what bandwidth you have. And then there's a lot of words, but this is really the result. In this case, you have 12.93 megabits upstream and 11.52 megabits downstream. Everything you have to do is to push a big bottom, and you get a result. And we added, so you can also test IPv6 in this application. Everybody can do it. It's really a service we're providing on the internet, and it's very popular. We got 10 million. We have had 10 million measurements now within a year, roughly. So this is really the de facto standard. Whether you have problem with your internet, you test what your performance is. And, of course, why not upgrade this to IPv6? We've done it. And so far, we haven't had so many testing their IPv6 connection because, as you know, there aren't so many IPv6 connections around. But this is an example of our service that has to be upgraded. To find out more, how does IPv6 work and the IPv6 market work? We made a market survey among CIOs, and the result was sort of interesting, or shall I say, not interesting, because we asked 103 of them, and they are quite busy people, so it was quite hard to get answer, but we managed. And if you look, who were they? Well, they were typical from larger companies. And if we start the questions, have you already begun to consider how IPv6 will be introduced into your company? No. I mean, considering is not really obligating in any way. So only 50% said, well, I have been considering, but nothing more than that. I thought about it once or twice. Not so good. So do you know what IPv6 is, how it works? Well, good enough, somebody said. Not particularly well. And some knowledge, I guess you could say the conclusion is, but not specific. So how about you're the CEO, how about the management? Do they know anything about this? Nope. And your own network, when will you upgrade? And I guess here's where you have the Gartner Group figures. Well, it will happen in a number of years in the future. Maybe 3 years, 4 years, who knows? But not this year. The first question was on your external site and on your internal site. It's sort of fascinating to see that they believe that they will have the deployment first on the internal side, not on the external. And in the RFPs, shouldn't it be smart to have it as a requirement, because it will cost you a lot less if you have it as a requirement right now? Yeah, good idea. And this is really my favorite of all the slides. There's something wrong with the fonts, but I shall try to read it. So when will you introduce IPv6? Well, we will do it when everybody else is doing it. So that's the traditional, what do you call it, catch-up effect, right? So we will not do it before anybody else, but we will not be the last. So who will be the first then? And that's actually why we asked Adam to come here, because is it so that you should actually have new applications driving this market? Is this old computer and user-oriented IP services, are they so conservative that they will never really get this market up and running? Is that an opportunity? So you could respond on that later. We also asked them what could be done so you have a faster deployment of IPv6 in your company. And if you just try to sum up the answers, external demands, somebody will tell them that this has to be done. If we get this exhaust of addresses, of course we have to do something. If the customer says we have to do something, maybe if we get more money or more knowledge. And then we also asked, well, we are .se, we are the registry of for the Swedish TLD. Do you think that we should do anything about this? Is this something that we should do, or should we just keep away of this? And our opinion is that we have got very good responses everywhere, people saying that, of course, you should do as much as possible, and just to give us information is a good thing. So please give us more information about this and keep us informed about everything. So if I'm trying to summarize this, I would say that when we're out there meeting people, when we're meeting technicians, they love IPv6. You don't have to sell IPv6 to a technician because they realize what this is good for. And so that's not the problem. It's really, what you really have to do is to be able to answer the question, what is this good for? What's the business with IPv6? And unfortunately, the management all thinks that IPv6, that's something technical. So it's not of my concern. It should be handled by the technicians. But the technicians won't get any more money for this. So it's not a management issue. And maybe that's a good thing if we could get the arguments for actually making this a management and business question. And Magnus, who will speak a little bit later, he will talk about that. That was one of our findings. We have to make this a non-technical issue also. So we have to change the language. We shouldn't use the technical language because then the management won't listen to this. So please, can you make a consultant's report on IPv6 from a management perspective and a business perspective? So you will present that result soon. And when we first began, of course, we are a little bit concerned about the exhaustion of the IPv4 addresses, the problem that will cause. But we realized it's no idea to go out to the companies and say that you will run into a problem, because everybody says that I'm not the first one. It's like the banks, right? Somebody else will take the first hit, so it's not my problem. So we really believe that you shouldn't go out and try to scare people about the shortage of address. You should try to see the benefit of the new address plan, where you actually have a huge amount of possibility of addressing stuff. So can you, instead of scaring, find the advantages of this and make it clear for the business people that there's advantages with this also? I think it was a very good thing you said about could you actually find these good arguments why you should speed up the deployment. And this is the thing you referred to, that if you shorten the time for upgrading to V6, it will cost more. If you could have it during a longer time, it would cost less. So those kind of arguments would be good to gather and be able to present. And in this very simple model, I'm almost finished. Let's skip that one. So, we think we shall continue work with IPv6, and we shall continue to build up the knowledge and create positive attitude among around IPv6. And we think it's important to have a good dialogue, provide arguments for IPv6, and spread a lot of information about IPv6, and we should also try to finalize the upgrade our own service to handle IPv6. That's basically it.
Thank you. Now, if Adam Dunkers from Swedish Institute of Computer Science quickly approaches the floor here and takes the, we'll perhaps win some 30 seconds. We're running a little bit out of time. We're not out of time, but we're running late, nevertheless. Adam promised that he'd try to make it in 15 minutes. I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you very much. So let me see if we can get this microphone. Right. So we've been talking a lot about IPv6, and we tend to see shortage of addresses as one of the driving factors behind IPv6. And I'm here to tell you that I don't think that computers will ever be a driving factor for IPv6 number of addresses. In fact, I don't even think that mobile phones are a driving factor, because I think they're just way too few. I think it's things like this. I don't think you see much of this because it's kind of small, right? And that's actually the purpose of this, being very small. This is a microprocessor, radio, and a sensor all on one little chip. FCC approval is pending, it says. I think it has gone through now. So this is a radio chip with a microprocessor that fits into almost anything and will be applied into almost anything. Let me just show you a few examples where we are actually using IP today. We don't realize this usually, but IP is very much used for other things than just computers. Here are a few examples. Right here we have, of course, the switches and networking equipment. We have this is a container security device from General Electric. Something you put on a freight container. The kind of stuff that you transfer aboard large ships, the big things. It has an IP stack in here connected to through a base station on every ship and in every port where the satellite link, where it actually phones home to tell you if someone has opened the container.
Can I immediately ask?
Sure.
It has an IP stack.
Yes.
What kind of IP?
V4. And I know this because I wrote it. IP, that's satellite, V4. All of this is V4 today. Car engines. Cars have lots of this. We talked about the Volvo and the wireless initiative. Well, car engines have had IP stacks for many years. Usually used to pull out the data from the engine at when they're first in for service. Airplanes, this is another example. All of these systems are actually running my IP software for embedded systems. Now, embedded systems, microprocessors. We tend to think of microprocessors as something we put in a PC, right? That's where we typically see our microprocessors. Well, it turns out that PCs really are a very, very, very small market for, in terms of volume for microprocessors. In 2002, that's 6 years ago, 98% of all the microprocessors went to embedded systems. That's almost 100%. Almost 0% went to the PCs. And looking back over the 90s, we see that the trend has been going definitely upwards for the embedded microprocessors, which typically are very small in terms of number of cycles and megahertz and bits. So 8-bit microprocessors are really, have been rising for the 90s. The 32-bit are far down here. This is something that is going on, been going on for some time, and has continued since And we can see this as an extension of Bell's law. Bell's law of computer classes, saying that every 10 years, roughly, we see a new type of computing platform emerging. He said this in the 60s, talking about mainframes turning to mini computers and you know, mini computers of the size of a refrigerator. But it has actually turned out to be pretty accurate ever since. In the 90s, we saw the Internet revolution following the PC revolution of the 80s. And we can see the 21st century, the first decade, as being the embedded revolution. We've seen the microprocessors move into everything that we have around us. I'll just have a few examples of it. We have this thing here sending the sound wirelessly over the air. I guess one or two microprocessors in there. I have a bunch of car keys here. Of course, microprocessors, cell phones, of course, even Visa cards with the microprocessor on them. So microprocessors are just everywhere. This is something that's happened. I would not really know about it because we can't see them. As you know, we could see the PCs, we could in some sense see the internet, but we couldn't see the embedded systems. What's happening right now is that we're taking this one step further and connecting all this together. We are actually taking the embedded systems with the microprocessors and putting a little bit of a communication device on them, a little radio, low-power radio, so that we can talk. All these systems can talk to each other. The picture down here is actually such a chip with an on-chip radio microprocessor. I don't think this has an antenna. That's why they are so large, these devices, is the antenna. It's essentially something like this, but with a metallic antenna around it. So, and this is something going on right now. In all these various different places in society, we have them in our homes. We have what we call smart homes. You know, we had this talk for 10 years ago, the smart home, and everyone was sort of laughing this off a couple of years later. But this is actually happening right now. We see that we put energy, we can do energy savings by having our thermometers and radiators connected in houses. And with weather forecast through SMHI, we can get an even better indoor temperature as well as save energy. Safety and security, intelligent buildings, productivity, defense, of course, predictive maintenance. We know when things break because we can actually measure the vibrations and so on. Energy savings, we have a data center up there, very popular for really trying to get down the temperature of these large computer centers. Transport tracking, healthcare, food. It's happening right now. Two examples. It's a building that's right now being built. I think they're probably completed by now. In Madrid. Maybe you know this, right? Is it complete? Yes. Oh, great. Because I think this picture is a few years old. So the interesting thing here is that they built this without any walls inside this. So they can move around all the walls, almost all the walls. Now, one of the things you have on a wall is a light switch. Right. You want to come into your room, you push the light switch, you turn on the lights. Problem is if you can move around all the walls, you can't pull a cable in there to close and open the circuit. So what do you do? Well, make them wireless, like this. This is a wireless light switch developed by a German company called Enotion. It's a subsidiary of Siemens. Wireless light switch with a little bit of a radio on, a little bit of a microprocessor, but no battery. So with this, you push the button, which generates the electricity enough to power the circuit, to power the microprocessor, to power the radio, to enable this to send just a tiny packet up to your lights that have something like this on them. A receiver that can turn on the light, and you configure this up to so that you can turn on the light in exactly your room. They also have temperature sensors in each room for controlling the environment. I think they have something like 2,000 or 1,500 sensors in this building and about as many light switches. Here's another example from San Francisco. San Francisco is a place where parking is pretty tough to get hold of, apparently. There was actually a guy who was killed in San Francisco a couple of months ago over a parking space. They had a shootout. Pretty nasty. So people are, I think, don't really, they see that parking is a problem in San Francisco. So what they did here was this company called Streetline Networks put out small sensors on the roads like this that could sense if there's a car here. Transmit this data hop by hop through these sensors to your geographical information system that displays this data on Google Earth like this. So you can actually see where there are parking spaces available. Here's a shot from, this was launched just a few months ago. Here's a shot from, it's a photo from the New York Times when they were out here. I think this is the CEO of this company making a public appearance on showing this system. So they actually put them in there. It's not there. So this is something happening right now. And, you know, I was asked to be here to talk about the business opportunities of this. And I dug up some numbers from a couple of analytics companies who said, mentioned Gartner. Unfortunately, nothing from Gartner here. A couple of others, though. Owen World is one of these companies. Gartner are pretty big, I think, in this area. So people listen to them. Maybe they'll listen to these guys, too. This is from Owen World, one of these companies doing business analysis of our markets. They predict that by 2011, this global market will have gone from down here to up there. Bunch of zeros here, and it's sort of pointing upwards. Another one, Frost and Sullivan, the revenues from this market, well, they predict that in 5 years or 4 years from now, it's gone from down here to up there. Again, a bunch of zeros here. U.S. dollars, whatever. Doesn't really matter. Forrester Research, revenues, going up there. Again, a bunch of zeros. Doesn't matter which currency this is in. The important thing to see is that you're going straight upwards here. And there are a bunch of zeros. So the companies that predict the markets see that this is a huge market opportunity in putting wireless radios into everyday objects, have them online, and to do all sorts of stuff with them that can actually help us as humans. Now, going back to the technology here, there are a couple of problems with doing this, or challenges in getting this connected, all these devices. Well, we have some very intense limitations in terms of cost and physical size. I mean, we can't put something that's as large as this into your radiator, for instance. It has to be small. It has to cost a little bit. So a few crowns and very small, which translates into limitations in memory, energy, bandwidth. We have microcontrollers with thousands of bytes of memory instead of gigabytes or terabytes. So the problem is that people have seen these limitations, seen that we can't do IP. We must invent our own protocol, which has led to a situation where we have many, many non-standard protocols competing in this area. Now, in 2001, I showed with the micro IP stack that this wasn't actually a problem, but that we could really do this for very small resource-constrained systems, we could do IP. This was in 2005, picked up by Jeff Mulligan from the IETF, turned it into a working group called the 6-LoWPAN working group in the IETF. They produced an RFC 4944 on header compression for IPv6 headers over 802.15.4, which is the radio of this guy. 2 years later, in September 2008, we launched the IPSO Alliance, the Internet Protocol for Smart Objects Alliance, seeing that now that we have the technology to do this, we can actually put these devices, make them talk IP. Now it's the time to move away from non-standard, non-interoperable solutions towards IP, even in this area. So we have a couple of interesting companies here. Cisco, Atmel, SAP, Ericsson, Sun are involved in this. Cisco were the ones that pulled this through. With the technical advisory board, where myself is in with Cisco, Sun, 6 UC Berkeley, and some others, EK Systems, doing energy savings. And 20 more. This is something going on right now. Just 4 weeks ago, we launched this. Now, just last week, we took the first tangible step within the IPSO Alliance to do something, to produce something technical, which was the world's smallest IPv6 compliant stack for these very small resource-constrained systems. Developed jointly by Atmel 6 and Cisco, it has 11 kilobytes of code, 2 kilobytes of RAM, and a fully compliant IPv6 on this. Seeing that we can actually do IPv6 on everything, we can do it on even the smallest of devices, as small as this thing. We see that this really is where IPv6 is heading. It's not the computers, it's not the cell phones, it's not the actual human users that will drive the addresses of IPv6 into actually being used. We think it's this. We think it's these used previously inanimate things like tables or light switches that are actually brought to life by IPv6. Part of this is, of course, the 6LoWPAN project, which is, as Stefan talked about, the IIS funded project, and the micro IPv6, which is part of this, the world's smallest IPv6 stack. And I think I just held my 15 minutes there. You're welcome to visit the Configure website.
Thank you. Magnus, if you take the microphone, are there any questions that you would like to raise right now? Okay, we'll be back. Very interesting to hear this. And now we're switching microphones. Okay.
Okay. So I think I will cover, in a way, I will say similar things that it's been said before. But as Stefan said, I was part of looking at IPv6 from a business perspective. And that's what we have also done. So I will try to take you through very shortly in 15 minutes what we came up to. With you have the report on the internet. This is a shorter version where we sort of put the pressure on the business perspectives. I think we've covered what .se is. Greenwich Consulting is a consultancy firm working with telecom, internet, and media companies throughout Europe. This picture looks very much the same as we've seen before, but I totally agree with you. This is what will happen, and this is what will drive internet tomorrow and IP, the need for more IP addresses. And we can always debate whether this will happen today, tomorrow, or in the future. But I think there are also business opportunities built into this, and that's what we are trying to say on the markets where we are working today. There is a lot of money to make, and I agree with you. If this happens, it will bring us to a world that is easier for the consumer, but where there is also money to make, both by saving costs, but also by bringing in new fun stuff that people were willing to pay for. And I would like to take a photo of that small ship, because that's where we actually need to be in order to get this boost for this. Because I think in the future we will have, as this picture shows, our home will be connected. When you come home from work or when you've been traveling, you put your digital camera on your table, and suddenly all photos are uploaded, both to your home PC, maybe to your daughter's PC. Some of them are uploaded to Facebook or other internet sites where you share them with others. You could be able, of course, to share the information within your home, both on your GPS, on your mobile, on your camera. You could watch different things on different devices at home. Your television will be IP connected. Your
maybe your dishwasher, your refrigerator, and so on. So the intelligent home will be there in the future. We've been talking about it for like 10, 15 years now, but I think it's a little bit about the microprocessor and how small and cheap it could be. So, and I think that will happen in the coming years. And it's important also to look at big players, not only the vendors and the microprocessor vendors, but also the operators that will actually run the networks to do this. And we could ask, is it the mobile operators, or is it the telco players, or will there be new players actually maintaining the networks that will upload different information on this? Because if we look at more of the business side, of course there will be Volvo cars, for instance, that's important. If they can have a good system where they can download information about if they need to go on service, or maybe they want to upgrade their big trucks going into to the Alps in order to have some extra horsepower, that's actually possible today. And we will have more devices. We could be sure that the Asians will try to push more fun devices to us. And when they are connected, it will give something extra, I would say. I will take three different cases to show that this is actually happening, at least in some places. And I think Beijing is interesting to look at, and the Olympics over there, because as we know, China has not many IPv4 addresses. They have about 60 million, I think. So they actually had the pressure on doing an IPv6 full-scale project when they did the Olympics. what is interesting here is to say that they managed to do the whole Olympics solely on IPv6. So everything was run on IPv6. All the cameras that were out there was uploaded, and you could have information about them. They could turn down the heat or with air conditions in the different places. They could switch off the lights, etc., etc. All their taxis, 15,000 taxis, were connected through IPv6. And as I said, they have only 60 million addresses. So if we look around the world, of course, the Americans has about 30% of all the IP addresses, so they still have a situation where it's okay. But the Asians, I think that's where it will all happen. And also if we look at all the devices that are pushed from there, I think that's where it will start to happen. Of course, all the security systems. I think one interesting thing is to say that all the last Olympics, there's been a lot of discussions around security. But now we've gone through the Olympics and there's been no problems that I've heard of, at least. Everything ran very smoothly. And, of course, there is still risk for a terror attacks, etc., etc. Something happened before the games, but not during the games. No problems whatsoever. And also, I think this shows that we've already... IPv6 has the possibility to... It's future-proof. You can actually use broadband technology. It's high-definition TV. It's the future where I think we will have the possibilities to have... Well, you know all this. So I think this is an example of a full-scale project that will actually go into back to the industry and back to researchers saying, okay, this actually works. We did it for a big event like the Olympics. So... That's a good case, I think. Another more funny case, maybe, is when you put this small device into a plastic rabbit like this one, and you start doing it big scale, then there will be a lot of devices. I think this is actually today a working device that could keep you informed about the weather, air quality, the traffic, and the stock market, etc. It signals when you receive an email. It moves their ears and so on. And it lights up in different colors depending on So it's a funny gadget, and that's what I want to show you. That's why I'm showing it. Because this is something we can laugh about. But imagine in the future when all my daughter's Barbie dolls will have an IP address in it, starting to date with other Barbie dolls and starting to chat with Ken or whatever. I think that's when we have the snowball effect starting to roll. And I think we could say, well, this is a product actually already out there. It's sold in 27 countries. So things are starting to happen already. So I think we need to look what will happen in the future when all toys, this is only toys. You can imagine if all toys made in China will have an IP address. I think it's not far ahead. It's not far ahead. Because if you could take the cost down and we could bring it in, they will have it even at McDonald's when you buy a big burger. So the other case is actually, like you mentioned also, I think it's interesting to see if we're looking about the intelligent home, what will happen on the intelligent office. And I think you covered it very much, the same thing that I'm saying. If we could have an intelligent office where we could turn down the heat during the night, we could... it's quite funny that you actually have the lights on in many offices today. Maybe in the future they will be turned down totally, and during part of the night it will be the logo of the company sitting. So you could actually say, okay, window number 4, 5, 6, 81, and 82, and etc. will be lit up, and then you will have a big logo of the company that owns the building. Maybe flashing, sending messages by turning on and off the lights inside the building. But I think also if we look at what's happening with climate change and everything, this is something people need to look into. And if we could, and the research shows that we could reduce costs by more than 30% by having more intelligent offices. And I think this will happen. And then we will have small IP addresses in the lamps, in the air condition, in the PCs, and so on. And this could be managed by somebody centrally or by yourself. Maybe you could connect to your office. I connect to my office, and other people could connect to their offices. So this is interesting. And also, if we look at the security and surveillance, well, we're living in a more insecure world. There are terrorist threats, and I think especially if you go to America, this is something they are very concerned about. So if we could say that, well, we could actually track who's in the building, and that could be both for terrorists' purposes, but also if somebody gets ill and need help, you could say, well, it's actually in this room, or it's in this corridor, or it's in the toilet, and something has happened. So... And then you can, of course, see the other side of that coin with the Big Brother discussion. But we need to handle that somehow, because I think this will happen. And I think, generally speaking, well, I think it will make things easier. We will have more intelligence, and people will be willing to pay for that, and we will save costs. And again, I think if we ask this question, okay, what will happen when all offices have not one, not two, but maybe 10 IP addresses connected to different things? Well, that's a big volume if you calculate. So I think my message is this. If we add all this together, there's a lot of business opportunities. All these kind of devices, it will be gadgets like GPS, mobile phones, but also on top of this, and that has not been discussed so much. I think if we add cheaper things like toys, and as prices are going down, you will actually have it on anything. You will have an IP address on bread maybe in the future, or milk to make sure that it's good milk and so on. And then if we add all this up, of course, it's huge business opportunities. And it's important that somebody is there to grab it, because you could make money out of this. And I think even Gartner would agree that we need IPv6 to this, and not in 15 years or 10 years. Because if we look at the curve, okay, this is how it looks today. Somewhere here, if the assumptions are right, well, between 2010 and 2012, that's at least the estimates. Well, there are different figures on this, of course, but that's where we believe that we will have problems. The problems will start. But imagine if instead we have a sort of hockey stick curve coming with new devices in toys and rabbits and offices. Then we might have a curve looking like this. So the problem will come much earlier. And or the other way around, we will miss a lot of business opportunities because that we will have a scarcity of resource. And I think that's the most dangerous situation, because then people will stop to develop new services and you will, this is not possible, we have to continue. And we are now doing NAT, and we're doing double NAT, and we'll do triple NAT, and etc. But I think if we have IPv6, this will work, and then there's a lot of business opportunities for everybody. Okay, that's my message. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes, thank you. Let me see. So we have there we are. Yes, Hoshi Stefan. So, okay. Thank you very much indeed, all speakers. It's most interesting for me to hear this. I hope you also found it interesting. I have a comment, and you had on previous. You had this, and just to see what the reaction is, I don't agree. There is no business opportunity in IPv6. The business opportunities are in applications using IPv6, like climate control in offices, like applications for cars, for whatever. And if we try to sell the message to CIOs and CEOs and whatever, that, sir, you just have to invest in IPv6 because you're going to earn a hell of a lot of money, or you're going to save a lot of money, they're not going to be... They're going to ask why, and you can't tell them why. I think we must focus very much more on how to build the applications and how to make the applications come into business. That perhaps is also a message to the to the commission that, I mean, focusing on the technology as such is important, but it's never going to take off. If you really can't show CEOs and where the money is. Because the answer you're going to get also is, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Now, does internet work? Yes, it does. Does IPv4 work today? Yes, it does. Do we have tools to to avoid the problems that you're talking about? I've heard about something called NAT. Could that help us out? Yes, sir, it could. Okay, so it ain't broke. Why should we fix it? Why should we invest a lot of money here? I think the business has our business. Has to be very much clear on exactly how can we promote this, not by talking IPv6, but talking applications and talking to the part of this business, the IT business that develops applications. Now, this was a reaction from me. Having said this, I'll open the floor for any questions or any things you might like to add to the discussion. Anybody? Adam?
Yes, thank you for reminding me to use this.
Yeah, I just want to say I think that Magnus really hit the head of the nail there when I said that the risk isn't in losing out on IP addresses or the technical problems. The risk is falling behind in the actual business that is coming here. And I think maybe what we should do is not tell anyone about this, but to keep this for ourselves and just great business on this, because then everyone will follow. We'll have done the job of informing the world, and we'd be very rich as well. So if we just shut the lid here, I think we'll be fine.
Okay. Let me run over there with a microphone.
So, Petr Stilgen here. I, besides working for the Swedish Registrar, I also am self-employed as a consultant in software, hardware, security, and other things. I think that this micro IPv6 stack is a good step in the right direction. Really, the software and the tools need to surface and need to start being used. Just put into embedded systems. And maybe I saw your paper. I didn't have a chance to read it. I only found it this weekend. But it's important to also have some kind of mesh thing for it. I don't know if it does that already, but okay, good. So that it isn't such a huge administrative problem to solve for adding internet into all things. But really just add in a small micro for a US dollar or maybe two, and off we go.
Okay. Anybody else? Question: which one might raise is whose responsibility, or who is it to have these applications that will create the need for IPv6? Have them up and running. Is it the internet community? Is it the .sc? Is it .d? Or is it the commission? Or where do these applications come from?
I think Adam said it best. Anyone who wants to make money can do this.
Okay.
Well, there were a number of things. First of all, I share with you your skepticism about technology and application. A number of things that I would see slightly different than you. I mean, having said this, I'm totally sympathize with your views, but I have been through some analysis and a lot of talks. And we should really, being in favor of IPv6 means also be really realistic. Otherwise, we are missing the boat here. We should be clear that most of the sensor networks, most of the business opportunities can be fulfilled with IPv4. It is like this. Many of those things can be made easier by IPv6. And for instance, if I take 6LoWPAN, then actually you have a kind of business case, because IETF is standardizing 6LoWPAN only on IPv6, mainly because the fixed router header allows for compression, which is not the case for IPv4. So this is one of the advantages which drives through, but it's only one little piece in this one. A lot of sensor networks that you have described run on IPv4 or even not on IP at all. Not even on IP at all. You can have intelligent home networks which runs on some proprietary networks, and you have one IP box. You can even have not even a fixed IPv4 address. You get a dynamic one from your ISP. So the question here is really, where are we heading towards? What is the real business case? And if we are honest to each other, the business case is not really evident. Therefore, there are two things. The first thing is, over time, the IPv4 address scarcity will speak a language, so people will feel it. And then people will make a decision. Do I really have to suffer from it? Do I really have to buy IPv4 addresses from eBay or whatever they are on the market? Or am I simply changed now my strategy? Probably a lot of ISPs will start to think about business continuity and start to invest more in IPv6. So this is a trend that will come up, but they need to feel the pain first. People react only with pain. That's somehow seems to be our nature. But on the other hand, there are some of the business cases which may be interesting for CIOs, but we have to select them very carefully. The 6LoWPAN is one of them.
My example of end-to-end security may or may not one of them. I spoke to a relatively small ISP recently, and they also have web hosting and web development. And the CIO told me, well, what they are doing, they are offering their customers an easy access to the developer machines, and they can do this easily over IP version 6, and IP version 4 would have been a nightmare, because they provide their customers with IP version 6 by default. But this is a kind of business decision they have made. It's a kind of forward-looking. So we basically, what we have to do is to change the mindset. We have to be realistic. Everything mostly can be done on IP version 4, but it will be the future will be IP version 6. It will be more agile, more innovation will be possible. So changing the mindset is probably what we need to do. But we have to be realistic that a lot of hardcore people would simply say, oh, well, I stuck to IP version 4, then I know what I have.
Thank you.
One small comment. I think it's a little bit also about the matter of standards, because we could always say, if we look into other industries, we could talk about the telecom. We move in from GSM to 3G. Sorry, and we could say that, well, now that we know that it took a long time to actually deploy the new services that needed 3G. But we could also say that, okay, if we waited 2 or 3 more years, maybe still we would have waited an additional 5 years for the services to kick off. And I think it's also, there will also always be ways to do things, to continue to upgrade. When I was working with NMT 450, they said that, well, you could add SMS to NMT 450 also. And the technicians were saying that that's possible. And then we can upgrade that network and adding more features and so on. But I think it's a matter of also choosing, okay, if this is a standard that will be used throughout the world, and it's there's been some effort put into it, I think there is also a drive in the standards. And I think that's important to add and to try to sell as a message.
Thank you. I would like to put a question. I know you raised your hand. I wonder if you are you leaving the room now, the representative from PTS, the regulatory agency in Sweden? Because if so, I would like to raise a question. Do you at PTS consider the lack of interest in IPv6 and the risk for internet running out of addresses as a problem for society and business? And are you planning about any actions in this? You can think about it while you get the microphone.
So I was thinking also that the reason it's not kicking off could be simple engineer. I was about to say laziness, but you all know what I mean. For example, USB is a nice new standard. It's pretty good technology, but a lot of people still want to use just a simple serial connection. And USB is all but a simple serial connection. It's much more advanced. And a lot of engineers, they know serial connections, but they don't know USB. So the trend is to not have USB as ubiquitous as it could be. And that's sort of a pattern we recognize, I think. I don't know. I don't really. It's not much of a question. It's just an observation. Maybe it's something about education also. Yeah, I don't know.
Thank you. Now, if you dare to comment from, or Dan didn't.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, okay. So we have been thinking about IPv6. At least I have done that on the agency, and we plan to actually to make a test to start with, to make our web server available both in IPv4 and IPv6, and notify. In dire form on the website the problems that we will meet to do that. We have an internal IT department who will exercise that. But in parallel to this, we think that IPv6 with all the addresses can stimulate the industry in Sweden to produce, make the industry calm no problems with addresses. So I think it's an important thing for the society also.
I understand that you consider it's basically a question for the market, and not so much for the regulatory agency or the government. Okay.
So on that note, I'm putting on my ISP hat again. I have our hosting is using one ISP here in Sweden and a connection access from one ISP, and I have on several occasions attempted to request IPv6 addresses from them and not succeeded at all. Is that something that PTS would consider to get involved in? I mean, sort of pushing infrastructure suppliers to start delivering IPv6 to customers who want it.
I think you are nodding yes. Or do you want to comment on more? Come down more.
That's why we wanted to IPv6 to happen by the content providers in the public services should start, because any the other won't will not start. And as I said, in the future, in perhaps 3 or 4 years or something, we will regulate. It should be possible to get IPv6 address from the ISPs, and it should be possible to get DNSSEC from the ISPs and from the DNS providers.
Will the Commission support when they regulate that IPv6 must be supported? You can think about that.
Thank you. I have a question regarding the security, or maybe the problems of identification that we may face with IPv6. I'm not a technician, so I may say very naive or almost technically stupid things, so forgive me. But a lot of authorities now use the IP to know who has done what. I mean, that's why in a lot of websites you have this, your IP is recorded. I don't know if it's working or not, but we assume that even if we don't have a fixed IP, our ISP is providing dynamic IP, but he knows who is providing the IP to. We have a contract with him. So if there is a problem, if there is cyber attacks or cyber terrorism, or I don't know, there is a way to find the man or the computer who was behind this IP. But if you put IPs on Big Macs, for instance, and dolls, and that you can use these things to, I mean, at the end of the day, this is an IP, so you can use it to be identified on the internet, I guess. So is there any problem with that? Are, I don't know, big security governmental authorities that are having problems with IPv6?
Now, that's also an interesting question, when the question of integrity. I think I'll give the final word to you from the Commission.
I mean, as you can imagine, there's a long discussion. You can, I mean, there are various aspects to your question. So the deeper you go, the more aspects you have. First of all, in terms of, in general, there's no difference between V6 and V4 in that sense. There's one element in it which you could call private addresses. It's the following, because IP version 6 has what is called auto-configuration, and in a standard protocol, they use the machine so-called MAC address to configure the IP, the machine, and to get you an IP version 6 address. Now, this part is always the same. And that means if you go out on the internet with your IP address, the IP address may be always different, but the MAC component is always the same. And that could allow some tracing, if you like, on the internet. That has been dealt with, by the way, in a new RFC, in a new IETF protocol, whereby this part is randomized. Using randomized for enterprise users, that has another problem. Using randomized addresses makes it hard to detect devices on your internet, on your own intranet,
because you use certain administrative tools to find your devices. And if you can't find them any longer, you cannot manage them. So one of the recommendations is for publicly facing machines, you use a randomized address, and for the internal network, you use the one with the MAC address so that you can find them. But that is something that has been voiced and coined as one of the issues. For the rest, it's more or less the same. There's no much difference. There's one also that came also out from the presentations before: Internet of Things and billions of devices connected, and so on and so forth. I would caution here a little bit. This kind of terminology of revolution, I've always been skeptical with this. The reason is the following. Even there may be IP addresses on devices, on puppets or dolls or what have you, that doesn't mean those addresses are connected, if you like, or reachable. Reachable is the right word. It doesn't mean they are present on the internet. They will be hidden. Because your home network may be full of IP addresses, but you certainly don't want to publish those IP addresses on the internet, right? You don't want to be in a DNS searchable, saying my alarm accessible over the internet. You may want to have your alarm system reachable over the internet, but of course that is only for you privately. So you will always have a very clear hidden address, and you will have passwords or even two-factor authentication to get on your network. And that means they will not be necessarily an interconnected world as such, but devices will be reachable, and therefore those addresses will not be visible on the public internet. They will be known to you, known to your girlfriend, and to someone else, but certainly not known to the public internet.
Thank you. At the next session, Anissa will be the subject, and that's an agency working with security. Perhaps these issues might be raised again. Just to conclude, I understand there are a lot of more subjects that could be discussed and must be discussed. Security, integrity, and whatever. I think it was the most interesting discussion anyway, and I would like to thank the speakers very much once again for their participation with a big hand. And right now it's coffee out there, 4:15. The next session begins. Thank you for attention, for being here, and making it a good seminar. Would the speakers please stay just a minute, one more minute?